Careful, Tong, you're gonna get Mego to start sizzling like bacon over here.
That's the goal, Shime. I'm so curious what this is.
I can't believe you guys have never heard of that.
Never.
Is it the worm?
No, you just, do you want me to demonstrate on the floor?
Sure, please. I'd be happy
I can
to
turn
see
the
this.
Music up, Mego.
Okay, hold on.
I need to see this.
I'm kind of worried about this floor because it's gross.
It is kind of grimy.
They cleaned it before you got here.
Oh, they perfect. They cleaned it. You literally look like you're just having a seizure.
Fish out of water. That's what it looks like.
That plays really well.
You really gotta jump. You gotta really
you
get
gotta
that body
like,
off
jump
the floor.
Up. Think about sizzling bacon on the grill.
Yeah, it really
on
pops.
On the griddle.
Yeah, every once in a while, that grease pop.
Now, but it lays flat, not on its side.
Imagine, you know, you have to be on your side. You have to be on your side. If you lay flat, that's creepy.
Yeah, it sounds
you
weird.
Lay on your side. Now imagine 26-year-old maid of honor Mego in a full gown at a beautiful Marion, Massachusetts wedding with a
sizzling like bacon.
8 or 9-piece band playing that, and I'm the only one sizzling bacon.
That's amazing.
That's right. I threw up.
You
after
really
that.
Know how to get a party started, I gotta tell you.
A maid of honor, that's like your job to that's be true. The after you give your stupid speech.
Make sure everything goes according to plan beforehand, give your speech, and then make sure the party started.
We got some interesting no fly zone. People.
Okay, shoot. What do you got?
So this one person says Journey is on the no-fly zone for weddings and no Bon Jovi either.
Don't Stop Believin' will definitely get played at my wedding. I would almost put that as a 100% guarantee.
I don't love a lot of those songs, but okay. I also understand that they're crowd pleasers.
Yeah, and well, so my fiance and a lot of her family love that music. So, like, that'll just definitely 100% be on the playlist. Like, it may not be on my personal section of the playlist, but it would absolutely be on
you
hers.
You can't personally curate the entire playlist to exactly what you want. That's how you get a party going.
No, you give suggestions and you let the DJ do his job. That's why you pay the DJ.
Yeah, you got
it. Or in your case, a live band.
Yeah. I did get it. I love a band.
I did too. I got to be honest. I do love a good band.
They're wildly expensive, but I love a live band.
Are they expensive?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure DJs are really expensive too, because everything, once you slap wedding on
everything
it becomes
expensive.
Three times what the price should be,
sure.
Respectfully. But yeah, I did a band because I was just like, honestly, my tax return was bigger than I thought it was going to be.
So you're like, honey, we're spending it on a band.
Yeah, I was stressed because I was like, oh, I don't know, DJ band, DJ band. And then I said, F it, let's go band.
Yeah, we went DJ. We already got ours lined up. We're good to go. Locked in. We got a lot of our stuff done. I'm pretty proud of ourselves. Still got,
when's your date again?
Not until April. So we got eight months and we're
perfect.
It's a lot of just like the small details.
Now you can chill.
Yeah.
Just the opposite of Drake May. Who cannot chill at all. He's got to have his head screwed on right.
He's got to be on his toes.
Mike Rabel's right there making sure.
Yeah, and I know he hasn't played a ton in the preseason. I think we've seen a total of, 12 or 13 actual passes from him in the preseason, some of which have been sailors, which isn't great. But I wanted to ask you kind of where you're at mentally on Drake May. Do you think I know at the beginning of the show we talked about overall team expectations. Have you gone up, down, stayed the same? On Drake May, have your expectations for him after seeing him in his limited amount of time in preseason, but in the joint practices as well, you've been at practice every day, kind of where are your expectations now for Drake May entering this year?
They haven't changed very much. I think Drake's going to be like a B-plus quarterback. I don't think that he's going to have this incredible second-year leap. And if people are expecting that much improvement, I just think you're going to be disappointed. But at the same time, like, when we go day by day by day and the reports come out of training camp stats and the interceptions that he throws, and I'm not as concerned by that, because the thing that matters the most is the joint practices, and he was really good in all three joint practices.
Yeah.
And I thought, especially in the Washington, the one practice with the Commanders, like, he looked better than Jaden Daniels. And I'm a major Bobo for Jaden Daniels.
You have his jersey.
He looked like the better quarterback. I think the key is going to be for him, and you're not going to love hearing this, Shime, the key is going to be for him to stay in McDaniel's system.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to stay within that structure to start, because not because, like, he doesn't have the ability to make these chunk plays and erase mistakes that he may make with interceptions and turnovers, but because of what's around him. I think for him to be successful, he's gotta subscribe to the quick game, to the screen stuff, to getting the ball out really quick. Because if you're concerned about the offensive line, that's really the only thing that he can do. I don't think the solution is going to be for him running for his life again and scrambling like we saw last year. I think that's going to be really counterproductive to what his development should be. And that doesn't mean he can't run. Like, he should be in design runs. Yeah. He should take off here and there.
On third and five, but when you can pick up a first down,
the solution has to be getting the ball out so quick.
I don't dislike hearing that. I kind of expected that before the season. When I was originally asked to give, like, my Drake May projections for this year, I was very similar to what Mac Jones did in his rookie year with Josh McDaniels, like those numbers-wise, right? Right around that 22-touchdown mark, I would prefer less than 13 interceptions. I would prefer a little bit more than 3,800 passing yards, or at least total yards, right? If you include his rushing and passing together, he should be in that 4,200-ish range, personally. And, like, that's kind of what I expected, and especially because of a lot of what is around him. I just didn't feel like it was enough to make this team and make him have that massive, massive second year leap. And so I kind of look at it, and you're absolutely right. Like, this is what the Josh McDaniels offense is predicated on: quick passes, getting the ball out, running effectively, screens. That's kind of where they're going to have to live with how many question marks are on this offensive line. And I think that's okay. Like, I think that's a good place to be in. And as much as I hated, and I hate the strong word, as much as I disliked the initial Josh McDaniels signing, seeing what the roster is as currently constituted, I get it. Like, it makes a little bit more sense to me now, because they just don't have the offensive line play to run a system like a guy like Ben Johnson wants to run, if I'm being completely honest. They
so
don't.
What does that include that they're not able to do?
They're
like
not
a
able
Ben
to.
Johnson system.
They're not able to take. They're not able to run a lot of play action, six-step drops, like deep drops for the quarterback.
They do play action. They do have play action. It just always results in like a crossing route. It's shallow
exactly.
to
Whereas
a tight end.
In that Ben Johnson offense, they're looking for big explosive mm-hmm. plays. I don't think this offense is going to be able to produce a lot of big explosive plays. Like, they don't have the protection. You're going to see a Drake May finds one-on-one coverage somewhere on the perimeter, and he's going to take a shot downfield. That's going to happen because that's who Drake May is, and he wants that. He hunts for it. But you're not going to see the big dropbacks in the pocket looking for an opportunity to get past the safeties and get downfield. They, A, don't have the speed at receiver, and B, don't have the protection of the offensive line in order to do that.
Yeah, when he drops back, it's scary.
Yeah, it's going to, 9 times out of 10, I feel like when he gets those deep drops, it's going to end up being a scramble, a broken play that may or may not be a completion, or a throwaway.
I'll say this for something that has emerged as, I think, really positive for this Josh McDaniels offense in preseason training camp, is that I think the running game is going to help Drake a lot.
Yeah.
A lot, especially with Travion Henderson. Like, we can't really talk about specific, they called them non-conventional plays, which drove me crazy because it's unconventional.
Yeah,
unconventional plays on our like warnings of what we're not allowed to talk about at camp. But I'll just say, like, I feel like the run game, what they're able to do, their run blocking is fine.
Yeah, like, I agree.
When I think Will Campbell has that locked out.
Great, great run blocker. I've said that for all summer. I felt like he was going to be a great run blocker.
So I think that if Ramondre's healthy with Travion, that they're going to be able to, and Antonio Gibson, they're going to be able to go to that side so much and be able to do some RPO, some play action stuff that helps take a lot of the burden off Drake May. And maybe that's not like the most exciting thing that people want to hear, but I think for a young quarterback, it does help immensely. And they didn't really have that last year. They came out last year saying that they were going to run the ball. They were going to run the ball. Everybody knows we're a running team.
And they didn't.
But they didn't scheme anything up, and it looked completely detached from what
you're so
your quarterback
right.
was doing. Your quarterback just operated in a silo, ironically, because you said you were knocking down silos. But he just kind of like, the run game was Drake May taking off, or occasionally Mondre finding a gap, or Antonio having a spin move in the middle of the field. Like, that was it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Again, that's one of the reasons why I feel like the numbers for Drake May will be lower. They don't want to throw the ball as much. And so for me, at the end of the season, the most important number for Drake May and the Patriots as a whole is, how many freaking wins do you have? Yeah. Like, that's the
as Drake goes.
That is the most important number, because especially in close games, right? There's going to be the occasional game where they get blown out, or he blows somebody out, or the Patriots blow somebody out. That's just going to happen. When it comes to close games, one score games, how many times is Drake May able to get you wins in those situations? That, to me, will probably indicate the most important number throughout the course of the season. Because if he is 4-2, 5-1, 6-3 in one score games, you feel really, really good about the direction of your football team. But if he is 1-5, 2-6 in one score games, there becomes an issue there, because that means that in clutch time, he A, either can't make a play, or B, is creating some stupid turnover. And that's kind of the big thing that we need to keep an eye on this year, because as long as the stats are fine, like, there's, you know, the numbers. Vegas has him at 19.5 passing touchdowns, and I want to say only like 3,400 passing yards or something along those lines. If he hits those overs, like, great, that's fine. The more important thing is, how many times are you winning football games? And if you can show that you can win in close situations, I think that's a really big improvement over where you've been so far in the past. In two seasons, you've won 8 games. Let's go to Rick in Portsmouth. Wants to talk about Drake. Go ahead, Rick.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Mego. Really good show.
Thank you.
You know, I think, unfortunately, Drake May has a lot to learn. Like, I am not very optimistic about Drake May this season. He's got some leadership work to do. He's got some decision-making work to do. He's got hero ball tendencies. I don't think his mechanics and footwork are very good. He turns the ball over a lot. Honestly, I still think this is a learning year for Drake May.
Thanks, Rick. Yeah, a lot of what this year is for Drake May is, it's almost like the first half of this season is still the rest of his rookie year. Like, because last year was such a disaster for this football team, Alex Van Pelt just kind of was like, patted him on the ass and like, all right, kid, go get him. It really didn't help him grow at all. This whole organization did not really help him grow. He kind of had to learn for himself a lot last year. And so I think the beginning of this season, especially the first 4 weeks, are kind of going to be an extension of his rookie year. And that's when you're going to really need to get going, because as the schedule gets harder in that second half of the season, he's going to play better opponents and he's going to need to be better. And so down the stretch, can he figure that out? Can you win a couple games early to help your record look a little bit better? And then when your playing teams like the Cincinnati Bengals, the Buffalo Bills, the Baltimore Ravens, are you competitive or are you just getting steamrolled?
Yeah, I think what a lot of people are dancing around is that we just don't know him that well.
No, he hasn't played that much.
We really don't. And so the expectations, what people are saying, what they take away from him. I heard Greg Bedard on his podcast talking about the way that Drake handled himself at the podium after he had that really bad turnover in the Commanders preseason game. And that he just kind of shrugged his shoulders and Bedard didn't think that was a good look. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
If it doesn't bother him, isn't that a good thing?
Well, I think the idea was like he wants him to be a Chris Sale who's getting up there and being like, that was embarrassing.
Yeah, but how long did that work for? Like, he was good for 2 years and then he was just hurt all the time. Like, how long did that didn't work? Great. Like, Chris Sale was really accountable, but when he wasn't on the field, who cares? Like,
I think that with Drake, he's 22 years old. He started 26 football games in college and 12 last year. Like, we don't have a huge book on him.
No.
And I think that's really going to work in his favor in seeing teams as a starter this year. But in terms of like who he actually is going to be, it's all projection for us. And that's why I say, when you see reports where he throws 2 interceptions and you're in shorts and shells and it's half speed, let's not melt down over that.
Well, and I think you're right. I think there's an advantage for him this year in that a lot of other teams don't have as much information on him as they'd like. And especially being in a brand new Josh McDaniels offense, right? So you'll hate me saying this, but like, I don't expect Jaden Daniels to go nuclear statistics wise this year, just because, similar with CJ Stroud last year, I think is the perfect example, right? His rookie year, he was phenomenal. Like, the next great quarterback, he is tremendous, all these things. And then you go to year 2 and there's some issues with the offensive line, issues with play calling, and statistically he kind of comes back, but he still won a playoff game because the team overall is well coached, pretty good, and he is a good quarterback. I think with Drake May, The difference this year is that, like, he is going to do so much different than what he did last year. It's going to be really hard for teams, especially early on in the year, teams like the Raiders and the Dolphins and the Steelers, to look at last year's tape and expect they and think they know what's going to happen from Drake. Because with Josh McDaniels running the offense, it's going to look different. And then I think Drake is going to play a little bit differently than last year as well.
Hope so.
Yeah, like, I think that's the ultimate goal. 617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. But right now, Tom is going to get you caught up with what's trending. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Taking you up until noontime today. Nice three-hour edition. Mego and Shime on a Saturday. Since we haven't done a show in 2 weeks, figured might as well get in for a nice three-hour day. But Mego, prior to the show, actually last night, you had posed a question to me that you wanted to ask here on the air regarding Drake May and other young stars here in the city of Boston. So what was the question you had?
My question is, following the Roman Anthony home run
banger
at Yankee Stadium the other night, when you look at add in somebody else if you want, these three young athletes, Roman Anthony, Drake May, Jason Tatum, who is most likely to be on the next duck boat? Who is most likely to have the next championship for New England, for their team?
I think it's Jason Tatum. It has
to be. Thank you!
It has to be.
I thought you were going to fight me on this and say Roman Anthony.
No. I might put Roman Anthony last.
What?
Yeah.
Very wrong. I think you got Drake May goggles on.
And that may be true. To me, it's more of a Red Sox ownership thing. I don't trust them to spend the money necessary to acquire enough talent to help put the Red Sox over the top. I think the Red Sox will be competitive and be a good baseball team and a playoff team over the next couple years, but I just don't know if they're going to be World Series competitors yet. I mean, Jason Tatum's done it. Like, it boils down to Jason Tatum is one of the 5 to 10 best players in his respective sport, in a sport where that one player can take you to an NBA Finals. To me, that's enough to say Jason Tatum is going to be the next young star to win in his world another title.
So, to play devil's advocate, although I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I think the answer is Jason Tatum, and I think it will be sooner rather than later. I don't think we're going to be in this huge championship drought for all your teams.
No.
I would say that there are probably people out there, like my friend Adam Jones, who thinks that Tatum 95% will not be the same guy that he was before the Achilles tear.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's a chance of that, but did Kevin Durant win with the Warriors post Achilles tear, or was
that was before?
That was pre Achilles tear. Okay,
and then he became a bit of a journeyman. But I would say that that had more to do with
age.
No, what he wanted, not knowing what he wanted, fair, rather than his Achilles.
Yeah, I don't know. There's not enough. I guess there's not enough comps of young players, like star players, getting an Achilles tear and then kind of bouncing back. I mean, Tatum and Halliburton will be the perfect examples of this going forward. But I mean, when I look around, I guess I understand why Jones would be very just negative on everything.
When I did a show with him, I haven't asked him this question. I would love to hear his answer. But he's very adamant that he does not think that Tatum will be better than a top 15 player.
Interesting.
Which breaks my heart, and I don't want to hear that at all.
I don't think that's true.
I just don't think, to your point, what you were saying, that we have enough evidence or information about basketball players who tear their Achilles when they are entering their prime.
Especially in today's day and age with the medicine and the scientific advancements and all this. Like, the guy's already out of a boot walking around. I don't know. Like, people are super excited that he might be back in March.
Don't do that.
I agree with you. I think he can take the entire year off and still be the next guy to win a title in this town.
I would like him to take the entire year off.
I agree with you.
I think that
there's no rush here.
Like, I'm just guessing at this, but if he came back in March or April, it's because he's dying to get out there and it's his choice. But I think that I would rather him sit this whole year out, come back, be strong, be fully healed, be strong in your body too, because I think something that is the other concern when you listen to guys who have gone through this, like Kevin Durant, talk about the strength that it takes to be knocking down step back threes and all of that, is that he's losing calf strength. He's losing strength in that leg as well. Yeah. So his game will be a little bit different for a while, but I have confidence that Jason Tatum will still be a top 10 player when he fully recovers from the Achilles. And I think he'll be the next athlete, but it's interesting to win a championship out of those three. But it's interesting to me that you think that Roman Anthony is last. So like, what's the window then that you give Drake May if 21-year-old Roman Anthony is not winning a World Series before Drake May wins a Super Bowl? What's the window for Drake May to win a Super Bowl?
I think the end of his rookie contract, beginning of his second contract. So what is that, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, talk to me like I'm dumber. What year would that be?
By 2030.
By 2030?
Yeah, so 5 years from now.
That is so long.
I mean, you asked.
No, but I'm thinking like I'm putting this on
I think Tatum will win in the next
Tatum
3 years.
To be like 27, 28.
Oh, yeah,
you're talking to me about 2030?
Yes. I think that's how far.
We're going to have a lost decade of Patriots football.
The gap between Jason Tatum and the Boston Celtics and then the next best team in this city is way bigger than number two and number four.
Okay. I hear what you're saying.
Like, I think that's why. Like, I think Tatum could win another title his first year back from an Achilles tear, whereas I don't think the Patriots or the Red Sox are winning a title by 2027.
See, I disagree with your point about the Red Sox, because I'm starting to believe since the trade deadline that the way that the Red Sox are built this sounds obvious, but like by design, not going quote full throttle. I believe that they made decisions at the trade deadline where they probably looked at the analytics and what the computer spit out and said, we're maybe an ALDS team. And as much as everybody says, once you get into the postseason, anything can happen.
Yeah.
If you're in, you can
you.
Win.
Yeah.
Like, I get that idea, but that's probably not what they believe.
But at the beginning of
and
the
I
season.
And I think they're probably going to go for it next year, and they're going to go get Joe Ryan just like they did with, was it Crochet or Bregman?
Crochet.
Both
of them made out this offseason.
But that they couldn't have at the trade deadline because the price was too high for them last year. Yeah, so
Crochet,
they're going to take that route with Joe Ryan, have him be the number two, Bayo's the number three, and then they have like one of the best rotations in the MLB.
I hope that's the case, and I hope you're right, but all things to me have not indicated that that is in fact the case. Like, this team, going into this season, people were predicting them to make the ALCS and make the World Series, and yet we go through the deadline, basically nothing happens, and now, like, we're just, a lot of those people are now just content with make the playoffs, win a game or two, and all right, good season.
I'm not content with that.
No,
I think that's what they built it to be.
But, like, I just think that that's what the Red Sox are going to do. They are now just going to be they're the interest kings, they want to be competitive.
Just like your Patriots.
No, see, I don't think that... I think football is different in that when you have a quarterback who is really, really talented, you are forced to go all in. Like, it's not
if you're the Commanders not paying Terry McLaurin.
It's not that they don't want to pay Terry. It's just that the sides are negotiating
tactics.
They don't
like Terry?
No, it's negotiating tactics. I told you this when he first wanted a trade, was the last three teams that had players that requested trades all signed contracts with that team. Like, that's just like the new step now in negotiating is I request a trade, and that's when it feels like contract negotiations actually heat up in the NFL now.
We'll see. He's apparently at the facility today, so that makes Terry McLaurin. That makes me happy. But I can't believe you're so low on Drake.
It's not that I'm so low. I'm just,
and the Red Sox overall.
I mean, have you seen this Patriots roster? It's not good. With cuts coming up, there's a chance you only have one, maybe two guys left from last year's draft class.
Yeah, I mean, that's
like Lane Robinson and Caden Wallace are both on the chopping block. I think
Caden Wallace will be on the roster.
Okay.
I don't know about Lane.
So you'll have two of your eight picks from 2024 left on this team.
That's a brutal look.
That's
I think
horrendous.
Javon Baker might be a practice squatter.
That doesn't count. He's not on the roster.
Okay. I'm just saying. Yeah, I mean, like technically, he'll still be in the program.
Yeah, even if Jalen Polk gets to the practice squad somehow, he's not on the actual 53-man
Somebody
roster.
On the text line says, showing your basketball bias, Red Sox are closer than Celtics as currently constituted.
I am not basketball biased. The Celtics are way closer than the Red Sox.
Well, I would agree in the sense that the Celtics roster this season is is farther away from being a championship roster than the Red Sox roster is this season, and because of the moves that they have made, in part for money reasons,
math reasons,
yep, as they would say, and because of the status of Tatum. Will that change if they feel Tatum comes back at in 26-27 and is 90% healthy and 90% himself? Absolutely, you better believe that Bill Chisholm is going to spend.
Yeah.
Like, if you're afraid of them not spending and that it's going to be this new era of Celtics basketball where everything is forever clamped down, no, they're just going to wait for the window to open again, and they know that it's not right
now. If Tatum never ruptures his Achilles and they still just lose to the Pacers, they don't shed all of this money like they're doing, in my opinion. Like, I don't think they would be like, damn the aprons, like, we'll figure it out. We have Tatum, Brown, Porzingis, Drew Holiday, Derek White, and we kind of just run it. Let's go to Brian in Plymouth. What's up, Brian?
Hey, good morning, guys. Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
You guys do a really good job. Yeah, I think it's really, really good job, you know, in all the jobs that you guys do. So, big fan. Anyway, Drake May, I don't know, people just should pump the brakes. Let the coaching do what the coaching does. Josh McDaniels is not going to put him in a position where, you know, I think he's going to get extended. Obviously, you know, like you said, they're going to be very run heavy, which will allow him to, you know, it'll open things up as far as play action goes. And, you know, the biggest thing with him, obviously, is turnovers. But the other question I have is, what do you think the odds are that he plays 17 games?
Okay, thanks for the call, Brian. I think that's a fair question. Mego, I'll start with you. What are the odds that Drake May play 17 games?
I think it's going to be like, is it too much of a hedge to say 16? I see him missing a game.
Okay.
Yeah, for one injury, just not a major one, but getting banged up, maybe another head injury, unfortunately.
Okay.
Because of what we talked about earlier in the show, which is watching him drop back is terrifying, the way that the left side of the offensive line is right now. And so I think that he'll get smashed up.
Were you terrified last year when he played quarterback?
Yes.
How many full games did he miss due to injury last year?
He only missed a partial.
A half of a game. That's it. Like, I don't understand why people are so concerned about him missing time due to injury. I don't get it.
I'm not saying it because I think he's soft. I think he might miss a game. He's inexperienced and he's still a work in progress in terms of just protecting himself.
Yeah, I just think that everybody on the planet, it feels like, has overblown his quote-unquote injury proneness and like how running leads to injuries. It doesn't. Like, it just doesn't. I mean, Jalen Hurts got hurt once last year, missed like a game.
I mean, Josh Allen missed a game because he got banged up in the ribs.
Josh Allen hasn't missed a game in like 4 years. Lamar Jackson did not miss a single game last year. Like, running quarterbacks are awesome and generally don't miss much time. It wouldn't be okay if he misses like a game.
That's
maybe
why I'm saying
16. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the people that are worried about him getting like seriously hurt because he's a good runner is silly. I don't think he's going to get hurt running. I think he's going to get crushed
on a sack because he drops back and the line collapses in front of him.
Yeah, and that's fair. I just don't see the injury thing being a big issue. Like, I think that there is, I would put him playing 16 games, if you're going to set the line at like 15 and a half. So if does he play 16 games next season, I think it would be like minus 250. Heavily favored he plays 16 or 17 games next year.
Yeah, like, it's not the biggest concern for me.
Yeah.
I just think that it's not about like the style that he plays with in terms of running and leaving the pocket and making himself open to that. I more think it's a combination of experience thing where you talk about Josh Allen, you talk about Lamar Jackson. Those are guys who are such veterans now, but earlier in their career, they were more open to injury.
Yeah. And especially Lamar Jackson. I get that.
And the offensive line, the pass protection in front of him right now, not even just sitting here saying like, oh, you think Will Campbell sucks as a left tackle. It's his lack of experience and what he can see, especially when you have a pass rusher coming on the inside from him. Like, I don't know that he has his technique down there yet.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not technique. Maybe it's play speed. He'd probably tell me it's not about the classroom and he can't learn that studying
film. And I get that. I look at last season, I'm like, okay, Drake May missed a half a game. He was getting killed, and he missed half a game, and he wanted to come back in, and they, because they were taking care of him with kid gloves, they're like, no, you're going to stay out the rest
concussion.
Of the game. Yeah, he was ready to come back in.
Yeah, okay.
He That's wanted to come back in.
Taking care of someone with kid gloves.
I don't think he actually had a
concussion. The concussed quarterback wants to go back in the game.
If he had
went down to the locker room.
If he had a legitimate concussion, he would have been out the next week.
I don't know.
You don't just miss a half a game with a concussion and then come back the following week. That's not how that works.
He passed protocol.
Exactly, which is why I don't think he actually had like a legit concussion in the game.
I think there's different levels of these concussions.
Oh,
right?
Sure. But
I'm not a head doctor.
No, but again, like I just think that people like don't give him enough credit because I don't think they've seen
it. You don't
it
give
him
enough
tough.
Credit. This whole show, you've been sitting here lowering the expectations for him every time you talk about him. And then
what
you say
you
people, you say, oh, he's going to have Mac Jones stats plus the running. Oh, everybody thinks Drake is going to be
I've been this way since
that.
The beginning of the summer. I haven't
I know,
lowered expectations.
I know. I don't think you've lowered them, but you keep setting them very low from the beginning. And then you talk about like how great he is and how people don't have like
in the non-statistical categories, he's excellent. I don't think people understand how tough he is. I think he's way tougher than people give him credit for. All these people think he's going to be out with injuries all the time.
I would call him resilient.
Yeah, resilient's a great word. Very resilient. I think he can battle through stuff like that. I've seen one of the reasons Josh Allen doesn't miss football games is because he'll play 4 or 5 games with a UCL tear in his elbow or his pinky or wherever the UCL is that he played with a couple years ago.
I can tell you it's not in his pinky.
And a couple years ago, and he'll still just play through it. And Drake May, I think, is also in that category. He will do stuff like that. He wants to play football. He wants to be out there winning football games. Like, maybe people aren't familiar with him enough yet. They don't know his game. They're the Shaquille O'Neal, sorry, brother, I wasn't familiar with your game meme. But they will be very soon. I promise.
Also just tremendously disrespecting Roman Anthony.
I think baseball requires so much more than just like one player.
The Yankees
have Aaron Judge and they haven't won anything.
It's not about the one player exactly. It's just, hey, he's this young guy at the beginning of his career. He's probably going to be a superstar in Boston if they're not stupid and let him walk for free agency or he demands a trade or something. But I think that they'll pay him. And I think that because you have him, to your point, they're going to be putting themselves in a situation where now they have to spend a little
bit. I don't buy it. I've been watching them for years now and they just refused to spend money. They've finished in last place multiple times. They've made one playoff appearance since 2018, like that 2018 World Series. So like, I don't believe them. You have to show me you can do it before I ever believe it. I don't think that they're going to be willing to pay the money necessary to make them a World Series competitor.
Well, we agree. It's going to be Jason Tatum who gets the next championship for Boston.
Yes, we do. 617-779-7937. But you know what, Mega? We should talk a little Red Sox. Awesome game last night. Brian Baio pitched a gem. They beat the Yankees 1-0. We'll get into the Sox-Yankees series. They're now up 2-0 on the Yankees in the series. Two more games to go. Garrett Crochet pitches today. So we'll talk Sox-Yankees coming up here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mago and Sean here on Boston Sports Original WEEI, taking you up until noontime today as Red Sox pregame will get underway from there, getting you ready for Red Sox-Yankees Game 3 of the series, 105 first pitch right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Garrett Crochet on the mound opposite Will Warren. The Sox have won the first two games of the series. They have dominated. If there's one thing the Red Sox have done this year, they've dominated the Yankees all season long, which is great to see as a Red Sox fan. Mego, do you expect a Red Sox win today with Crochet on the bump?
I do. I always expect a win with Crochet, and maybe that's not fair, but that's the standard that he set for our expectations. For me, I was on TV talking about this last night, sick brag. I don't want to be like, they're not winning the way that I like them to win.
Okay.
But the way that they are winning isn't really like showing solutions to the problems that I think that they have.
Yeah, even like Lou and Fleming were making fun of them for not getting anything done with runners in scoring position
right,
the other night.
Right, before the on the Roman
before
Anthony call.
Roman Anthony home run, yes,
Lou
exactly.
Lou was basically saying, here we go, at least the bases aren't loaded. which kind of tells you where they're at. They're in a great situation for the most part with their starting pitching. Bayo can't say enough about
the growth
he showed this season.
100% agree.
And who he was last night.
Giolito has had moments. There's moments where he's definitely struggled, but he's also had moments of greatness.
Did you see the quote that Chris Cotillo had from Walker Buehler?
I did not.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let me cue this up for you because you're going to love it.
I can't wait.
Why is Twitter like this now?
What happened?
I'm trying to find just a simple quote. Type in Cotillo Walker Buehler, and the stuff that comes up on this computer should not be on a work computer. I don't know why Cotillo is affiliated with this, but we know that Buehler is moving to the bullpen. And apparently one of the people that he reached out to is David Price to be like, what should be my reliever's mindset? But he had this hysterical quote. I mean, I guess it's kind of sad for him because he's not a starter anymore. But okay, here it is. Ready? This is Walker Buehler to Chris Cotillo. He was being asked about turning into a reliever now, going to the bullpen. To be frank, if I wasn't so effing miserable trying to get people out every 5 days, I don't think I'd react positively to this at all. It's kind of a good sign of where I'm at mentally that I'm trying to find an opportunity or a bright spot in this for myself and our team. If I wasn't so effing miserable trying to get people out every 5 days. Like, this dude's a wreck.
This dude has been a mess now. And that's not just a thing that happens all of a sudden. Like, he's clearly been a mess now for, like, weeks. And the Red Sox have just been like, yeah, get out there, bud. Do your best. Just keep trotting him out.
There is a point where you feel bad for him. He's definitely working.
Yeah.
He's definitely trying. Hopefully, he'll be a better fit in the bullpen. But that quote is amazing. All this to say, like, I think their starting pitching is overall, the rotation's in a really good position.
Yep.
You are getting nice stuff from Bregman, from Story. Story had a great defensive play last night. And
he's had a few of those in the last month or
like,
so.
Like, there are obviously great aspects to this team. The offense is a little spooky.
It's very spooky.
It's a little weird. It's a little streaky. It's a little inconsistent. And situationally, it can also be kind of stupid. I mean, you can talk about whether you think that Kyle Hudson is intentionally sabotaging his own team as the third baseman coach. Like, if you agree or disagree about sending Nate Eaton on that final Orioles inning in the 11th inning, if he should have gone and they should have challenged that center fielder or not. Like, I think you can argue either side of that. I think you probably should have for the position that you were in. But even then, you would have just been tying the game once again in the 11th inning. Like, their situational offense is one of those things that you look at and I think you see whether they're closer to a real playoff contender. Like, a real, real deep playoff team or not. And I think they're showing you that they're closer to not.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just feels like they don't get many of those, like, hits in big moments. Like, we've had a couple of
them.
They've
had some walk-offs.
Yeah, so, like, the Sedan Rafaela one was great and stuff like that. I get it. But, like, I don't know. It just feels like in the middle of the game, in the fifth inning, when, you know, you have runners in scoring position, you can't get them home. And I don't know if you need to do what Wiggy says and just play more small ball or what, but, like,
bring them in.
They cannot
bring those boys in.
They cannot find ways to just, like, manufacture runs when they need them. They can't. It is very difficult for them, and they have been carried a lot by their pitching for a while now, it feels.
Well,
like.
And I think the question becomes, is it about the approach at the plate from the player and the coaching
or the organization,
or is it the analytical do you believe that Driveline is just spitting out the launch angle that you're trying for, and that's all that they're thinking about?
A lot of the times, that's what it feels like.
I don't want to think it's that stupid, though. Maybe I'm naive.
No, I get that, but, like, it feels like they don't want to just put the ball in play.
But, like, then you also see these reports about, like, Sidon not agreeing with the approach at the plate and just being so aggressive at the jump, like, earlier in the season. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm worried. Like, and this is kind of one of my things. We talked about, like, who the young player who will win a title in this town next is. And for me, the Red Sox are after the Patriots. And I think this is kind of like a lot of the reasons. I feel like they've had a lot of similar problems over the last couple of years, and they don't find ways to solve them. And they kind of just hope that, you know, oh yeah, the young talent's coming, they'll solve it, and it just doesn't. And it's like, Roman's been great, and he's awesome, and I'm really, really excited that he's a Red Sox. I love him. Awesome. But at the same time, like, Mike Trout was amazing with the Angels for years, and they won nothing. Like, it's like, you can have great players.
We have to go that far to the Angels.
But, like, but even the Yankees, like, Aaron Judge has been, outside of Shohei Ohtani, arguably, like, the best player in baseball over the last few years.
But this is where I think they're kind of, sorry to jump on you.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, this is kind of where they're kind of like the Red Sox, where they play like dum-dums a lot of the time.
game one against the Red Sox.
They played dum-dum baseball in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
And I think the Red Sox have a little bit of that. I mean, come on. That first game between the two teams on Thursday night, I was telling you, I was doing the YouTube TV split viewing experience, and I wanted to gouge my eyes out because I'm going between the third preseason game watching Wooldridge and this stupid Yankees Red Sox game that was very competitive and very stupid. Like, stupid play after stupid play.
Yeah, the Yankees just throwing a ball into the stands.
Like, so, you know, dumb.
He got off me. We ain't tripping about that.
Tell him, Joe. 617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here. Another hour left in the program, and then we'll get you ready for the Mass Mutual Red Sox pregame show heading into Sox-Yankees Game 3 of the series. Sox took the first two, looking to get a third, three in a row with Garrett Crochet on the mound against the Yankees today at Yankee Stadium. We'll continue with more Mego and Shime next here on WEEI.